Welcome to Off the Record, where we take a deep dive into the personal and professional lives of business leaders in the Twin Cities. Kathy Rabideaux, Market President and Publisher of the Minneapolis-St. Paul Business Journal, along with Dave Faust, President and CEO of Platinum Bank, team up to listen, learn, and laugh along with our guests as we go Off the Record.
Today on Off the Record, how fun is this? We have Nikki Roloff of Roloff Associates. She is the managing partner there. First of all, welcome.
Thank you.
So fun to have you here today. And give us like a quick 30-second elevator pitch about you. What do you do?
What do I do? Depending on the day, definitely does a lot of different things. But our firm, Roloff Associates, we are a CPA, fractional CFO, accounting firm. So all things numbers, all things taxes. Definitely one of our busiest times of year right now.
Oh,
and yes. And then we just launched Canopy Accounting, which is targeted at the cannabis industry specifically, and working on accounting 280E, looking into all the fun stuff around the cannabis industry.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
Yes.
What we want to do today on Off the Record is we want to hear about Roloff Associates and getting that started and all the wonderful things you're doing today. But we want to start with back to maybe not the day you were born, but where you're from, where you grew up, siblings, school, all that kind of stuff.
So from the beginning.
Yeah, from the beginning. All right.
So you're from?
Amory, Wisconsin.
Amory.
Yes. So people usually know it because of Wapagasset. Is usually when everyone says, I know where that is. That's like, yep, you went to either Bible camp, you went to the YMCA, or you have a cabin on WAPO. Those are the three things people know Amory for.
You grew up in Amory.
Yep. So I have my two siblings. Derek is chief of police in Turtle Lake, Wisconsin. So my family's still pretty much all in the Amory area. And then my sister, Shauna, she is a stay-at-home mom. She has three sons. And then they also have been in Amory this whole time. They're both the youngest and the oldest.
I was going to say, yes. Where do you fall?
Yes, okay. I am the oldest.
The oldest who left Amory.
Yes. So I'm like, it's a big thing. My family, like my extended family, I have 30 to 40 some cousins on one side, like first cousins. Two or three of us have left Wisconsin. And so, I mean, we're definitely the black sheep of the family.
You grew up, so you have two siblings. Tell us about your parents, what they did for work.
Yeah. So my mom, she did daycare for a while. Both my parents, neither one of them were college educated. So both very much worked their way, blue collar family. With being the oldest, I would come home, you know, get the kids off the bus or get my siblings off the bus, make dinner, that kind of stuff. Because my mom worked second shift at a factory for a really long time. And then my dad was a auto body mechanic.
So you were a latchkey kid.
Pretty much.
I was too.
Yes. Yes.
So tell us about school. Tell us, did you play sports?
I did not do a ton of sports. I am not the most athletically inclined person. So I did volleyball for a couple of years. I was in band. I did color guard. So I was one of the rifle throwers.
Were you good at?
I didn't drop it in a parade. So I mean, I must be somewhat good. But yeah, I did that. And then I did a lot more. Ironically, I mean, accounting, I was the statistical person for both girls basketball and then the football team. So did the stats, did all the writing. I do not watch any sports now. Just not a sports person, but.
So numbers were in your blood from an early
age? Yes, numbers are very much sucked in me and pretty early.
So good student? Were you a good student?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was the nerdy, dorky kid. In high school, like definitely did all the homework, was the one home on the weekends. Didn't really hit the party stage probably till college.
I was going to say things changed.
Things changed. Yes, Dave knows enough to know things have changed. But yeah, growing up, it was definitely more with my parents both working and my mom working second shift. A lot more of that kind of fell on me with the responsibility with helping with the kids at home and doing that kind of stuff. And so I worked actually too in the same factory that my mom did. And then did like my first internship there in their accounting department before. I loved to serve. I served all through high school, college. You'd meet a lot of really interesting people.
Serve like waiting tables?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, yeah. I was a server for a long time, too. I loved it. What was your first job then? Was it at the factory?
No, it was actually a little store called Family Dollar. So retail, but it's basically like a Dollar General.
And how old were you then?
15, I think is actually, I mean, obviously babysat before then, but I don't know if you really count that as a job.
I know.
For tax purposes.
Yes. Right? So yeah, did that and then went to switch over to the factory because they paid more and I could get more hours in. So that was the main reason for going there.
And what type of work did you do at the factory?
It was a 3M contract shop. So lint rollers, if you're familiar with those,
oh, yeah.
I made the lint rollers.
Who doesn't love a good lick? That's a satisfying thing.
So yes, then the factory job, I've always told my kids, like, they have to have a job in either factory or retail service industry. I'm like, you have to know what it's like to do both to figure out what you want to do with your life.
So what did you want to do at that age? So you're in high school, working, serving tables, working at a few different jobs. And what was your thoughts? What were your dreams at that time?
So I was also one of the first in my family to go to college. So I picked accounting because I was good with numbers and I knew I could always find a job.
Tell us quick about that conversation with your parents. Did your parents, were they, you're going to go to college, this is what we want you to do? Or was that more you saying, this is what I want to do?
It was more me. Mm-hmm. I was the one who was like, I wanted to get out of a small town. I wanted to be able to not live paycheck to paycheck. Like I grew up very much having that kind of, that's a family we grew up in, blue collar. And I was like, I want to do something different. And I want to go out there and see what is all available in the world. So that was more my thing with going to college. So I paid my way through college, moved out when I was 18, basically not far after graduating high school, moved out on my own and went to Barron County for 2 years. Wisconsin actually has a great program where you can go to a 2-year school and it satisfies all the requirements for your undergrad degree. And then you can transfer to a 4-year college. Since I was on my own, I was like, I couldn't afford tuition and room and board. So I was very much being like, how can I do this on the cheap? And so I did the 2-year associate degree and then transferred to UW River Falls my junior year after doing 2 years at UW Barron County.
Tell us a little bit about, you said you didn't do much partying.
She was a bookworm,
college.
Allegedly.
Yes, allegedly. A lot changed. College wrecked me.
So tell us about that, because I also worked and went to school and there was not a lot of time.
No.
Tell us about that experience when you're at school and you're working and...
So at one point, going to school full time, I held because with the CPA exam, you have to have 150 credit hours, but you can take whatever it is. So I actually double majored in accounting and sociology, and then got 2 degrees from both colleges, the science and a liberal arts one, in 5 years. But during that time, like working full time, so I actually worked at a CPA firm in New Richmond, Wisconsin. I was still serving at 2 different restaurants, and I was also a barista at a coffee shop in Richmond. It was basically, where can I get in the hours and be able to work and have the flexibility to go to college and still pay for life? So during college, I was either working or at school pretty much nonstop.
So after you get done, you got your degree, then what?
I was still actually living in Wisconsin at the time. It was Western Wisconsin, not a whole lot of job opportunities there. So I actually first jumped the river and started working in the Department of Revenue. I've never been yelled at so much in my entire life.
Even serving. I mean,
I know. It was like I was in individual income tax audit. Definitely not a fun area to be in. You get yelled at constantly. I handled that for a year before I left the Department of Revenue and then started going into public accounting and was like, this is ultimately where I wanted to get to, was doing public accounting.
And why was that? What attracted you to public accounting?
I love talking to entrepreneurs. Like, I love the different things people do. It's one of those things, I'm like, how do you actually make money doing this? Like, I had a client who is a palm reader for one of the national football teams. And I was like, that's a thing. Yes. It's one of those crazy things that you're like, I've never thought of this as being a job. And so it's just fun learning about different industries, talking to people.
So after the Department of Revenue, you went to?
At that point, it was Dene Kenefic. Okay. So a CPA firm. And at that time, they were in St. Paul. I think they're in Eagan now. So was there for a couple years. I job hopped a lot when I first got out of college. I was just trying to find the spot that we weren't cranking out tax returns. That's never been what I wanted to do. And so it's like I had been there. And then I was at Olson Thielen for a little while, got the audit degree, did the tax stuff, a little bit of everything on the accounting side. But I jumped a lot before I landed at Baumberg, Roach & Hanson.
What exactly were you looking for then? You said you bounced around.
A lot of it was, I didn't like the mentality of, which is a stereotypical accountant, is I give you numbers, you punch them in, we're going to sit here while I do your tax return. It was very transactional. And like I said, I picked accounting because I knew I was good with numbers. I knew I could always find a job. But with the double major in sociology, I really love human culture. I really love how people's mind thinks about money. What do they want to do with that? How are they going to get there? And just like the culture behind it and how... I mean, for women, a lot of people, women think power is a dirty word. Money is a dirty word. And just like how that kind of construct.
Both of those.
I don't know if problem.
Just that construct around it. And so I wanted to pull in that sociology aspect of being like, there's so much more to people's businesses than just a tax return and just numbers on a page. And so a lot of it was just trying to find where can I actually get where I can actually talk to the client, because a lot of firms, you're the one pumping out the tax returns, only the partner talks to them. And just having that proactive, we want to make a difference and not just compliance work.
So were you thinking about being an entrepreneur, you know, as you were working all these jobs, as you got into the job market, did you think you ever wanted to own your own practice?
Yeah, when did that itch come along?
That was farther along. I never grew up thinking I would own my own business. It was never a possibility that I thought I could do it. It was one of those things of being like, I always thought, you know, you go to school, you get a job, and you just work.
You work there 50 years.
And you retire.
Cash.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. And so, and that was the safe thing. And that's the secure thing. Mm-hmm. And so it was never something I dreamt about or wanted to do until when I was at Bobber Gorton Hansen and we were just having a conversation one of the days. And I was like, I want to do that. I want to be making a difference. I want to own a company. And that's kind of how it just one day I was just like, I want something different. I was tired of playing it safe is basically what it comes down to.
Tell us a little bit about that. So you make the decision that you want to do something different. And then what do you do?
At that time, it was still a few, like I kind of started talking about it. Kevin at that time, him and I talked quite a bit about what does that look like? What could it be? And then we broke off back in 2017 from the rest of the firm. We wanted to really grow how our firm was working. Our big thing being we wanted to be able to talk with our clients and we wanted to kind of change what the model of a CPA firm was. Mm-hmm. And so we had had all these talks and then we launched in September of 2017 with there's four of us at that time. We had two partners, two staff, and it was one of those we're just like, okay, we're going to go for it. We're going to make a difference. We're going to change how we're working with our clients and really put out there of how we want the CPA world to be different.
So it's 2017, you decide to launch, there's four partners.
Two partners.
Two partners.
Yes, four people total.
Four people total, two partners, and the name.
CPA firms and law firms in Minnesota, you have to have the last name of a partner. It is the most archaic thing ever. I really wish we could change it, but if you want to put yourself out as a CPA firm, it has to be your last name.
I did not know that.
Yes.
So Kevin was your partner.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So at that time it was Roach Associates. Because for one, Roach Roloff doesn't really go, like, I'm like, it doesn't
where
really.
Where are you going? It's Roach and Roloff.
Yeah, it's a very guttural kind of sound. We're like, that just doesn't make any sense. At that point, I could have cared less. I still could care less to really have my name on the door. Like, I feel like it's a great thing. Like,
is that still a requirement in the state?
Mm. Yes. So when we had to change our name back in 2021, my partner had actually passed away unexpectedly. Mm. And so then we had to change, obviously, with the law.
Yeah.
You have to have one of the partner's last names. And so that's when it transferred over to Roloff Associates.
So no, Kevin, you mentioned great guy, good friend, a good friend of the bank and just good friend of many small business owners. So he passes away suddenly. Are you okay talking about?
Yes.
About, okay. A surprise. Young guy, super fit, mid-40s.
46.
And all of a sudden, you know, he's no longer there. So can you talk about those moments, kind of where you went from that point?
Yeah, it was, at first we referred to it as the incident because it was back in December of 2020. And he had what we found out later was a stroke. At the time, we didn't know what it was. And so he had a stroke in December. And he basically kind of took that tax season off. We were like, hey, you need to get better. You need to be healthy. So he kind of stepped back from the firm for a little while to be able to get his health back in order. And then he had went to Mayo Clinic on a Thursday in April. I think it was like April 14th. It was right before, ironically, right before the deadline. And he had gotten a clean bill of health. And he had the second follow-up stroke that Saturday. They have since found out like the kind of stroke he had, you can't find it. Yes, you can't predict it. So he had a stroke the following Saturday after that, and then was put on life support. Yeah, 46, married, two young kids at that time, and passed away on May 18th of 2021. Mm. So definitely nothing any of us had experienced before. I mean, we've worked with a lot of businesses. I've worked with a lot of different situations, but having something like that where a business partner passes away very unexpectedly at such a young age for such a random thing, like of something that you wouldn't even expect, was one of the hardest things ever with the company.
Talk to us a little bit about that, getting through that. Company needs to continue. You need to continue. Tell us, you know, what are some things that you feel like got you through that time?
Honestly, Platinum Bank was a huge supporter of us. I mean, they always have been, but having that relationship and that backing was huge. We're actually an EOS company as well. I've credited a lot of us getting through that time with being EOS because we had the process and procedures. We had everything. Our implementer, Greg Saunders, stepped in and helped a ton just to keep things going. But it was one of those things, which actually works out well now for business, or like talking with people and like kind of telling them our stories. Our life insurance was underfunded at that time. We had grown so much in the year before that, that our life insurance policies were underfunded. We couldn't hire somebody to come on and like help us run the business at that time. So it was, I have another business partner, Al. We had bought their firm shortly after we had launched Roach Associates. We had bought out another CPA firm as well. But Al and I had to really keep the company up and going. Mm-hmm. And it's a professional service industry. It's one of those that usually the person holds a relationship.
Right.
And so we weren't sure, like, are we going to lose a bunch of clients because their relationship was with Kevin? Mm-hmm. But the way we built the firm of being very hands-on and everyone gets to talk to everybody, our clients were amazing. They literally stood by us. They gave us all the grace in the world to be able to process his passing, work through how do we keep things going, like trying to figure out. And my team that was with us at that time really stepped up. The culture we had built there, they propped Al and I up for several months so we could just wrap our brains around what was going on, keep the business going, keep the lights on. But it was one of those things that's like we would talk with our lawyer, we would talk with other people, and they're like, they didn't have that experience of what happens when a partner at such a young age dies so unexpectedly. It was kind of uncharted territory of trying to figure out, well, what's our best steps? How do we do this? How do we tell people? Mm-hmm. His wife had an amazing hearing bridge. She's an amazing writer. And so she would put stuff on there and it's like we would share that back with our clients and be like, hey, like you can follow. She's being very up to date on stuff, but just kind of like walking through it with her. But we would have clients reaching out all the time being like, well, what's going on? What do you guys need? And so like that really helped us get through a lot of it.
He passes. How many employees do you have at this time?
At that time, I think we had 6 to 8
okay.
people there.
And then tell us how it evolved and how you move forward. And it's you and Al and kind of how you transitioned into where you are today.
So, yeah. So once, like I said, that the rest of 2021 was kind of a whirlwind of just let's maintain, let's keep things going. We did the name change officially. I think we launched that like January of 2022. We're kind of like, okay, like we wanted to honor the rest of that year and then make the change as we needed to going forward. And really just kind of doubled down on, we realized how amazing our culture is at the office and kind of what we had built of this family. And I know people talk about like, you know, you're an employee, it's not a family. But that whole experience brought us, the whole team, so close together.
And then, I feel like those people don't have good relationships. Maybe in the, like I'm always like, how is that? You spend so much time with people, you know. I agree with you. I disagree with that.
Yes, of being like, no, you can run a business and still have that business be a family,
right?
And so, once 2022 started, like I said, EOS was a huge thing of being like, where do we want to go? How do we hit these goals? And then just kind of doubling down and saying, we're going to keep doing this, and we're going to keep the vision that, you know, us partners had together of where we wanted to be, how we wanted to grow. And we, during that time, since it was also COVID, we had a lot of clients then who were already referring us. We had a lot of clients across the nation, but then people kind of got beyond that. My CPA has to be two streets over. They have to be in the same town. They have to be in the same state.
I need to sit and watch them do my taxes.
Yes.
Which is the worst.
Because I'm just
waiting to see the numbers drop. Like, I just want to know give me that bottom number.
Yes. And so with that is like, we had so many client referrals. We've never really done marketing and which to me is kind of amazing to have gotten where we are without having a ton of marketing to get us there. But it's been a lot of client referrals. And then with PPP and the ERC, and we had a lot of those clients reaching out, or then them recommending to their entrepreneur friends and their business owners to be like, you guys need to talk with them to get this up and going. And so we went from, the team of 8 to 12 within a 6-month time frame. Like, we started doubling. in size. And then like, as we've just gotten more niched into the fractional CFO side and growing that part, and like, how can we support our business owners? Because a lot of them would come to us and like, it's remote working. We don't know how to hire people. We don't know, we can't find accountants. We don't know how to train them. And so then we started offering different services. That's when we started launching, well, we can do all the accounting for you. We can do the bookkeeping. And so we started launching that part of the...
Is that when you came up with the fractional CFO piece because of your clients inquiring or saying
yes,
that we're having a hard time?
And so that the fractional CFO kicked off back in 2018. We started growing that side of it. We had always outsourced the accounting side. It was one of those where like, well, it's not the area we want to be in, or we weren't being asked to provide that. And then once COVID hit and clients started saying, hey, we need help on this, we're like, well, this seems like we can hire those people. We can train them. Mm-hmm. We went fully remote during COVID. And now we have, 20 some people we have right now. And the majority are all across the US. We have less than 10 people in Minnesota.
Oh, wow.
So going back to that time of adversity, teams either explode or they come together. How did you bring the team together? Can you just share some insights about kind of those magic moments and conversations where like, hey, we're just going to keep living the vision that we created.
And with that, can you include anything that you did for you too? I think that's a big part of it. Yeah.
So with our team, like we have three core values: cares for people, trusted, evolving, and willing to be vulnerable. And we talk about them all the time. I'm also a certified Berkman coach, which is a behavioral assessment, but it talks a lot about that. I'm a huge fan of Brené Brown. And we were very open with our team. It was one of those, we had a lot of very hard conversations. I cried more than I ever have or ever thought I would in front of, you know, the team. But we had actually, we were very open with them. And like, here's what's going on. Here's what we know. Here's what we don't know. Like, we will be very open. If you ask us a question and we can answer it, I'm going to straight up tell you, I don't know. It helped to build a lot of that trust in one another in a time where it could have easily exploded. And I was afraid. The team could leave. Like they could be like, we don't know if this company is going to make it. And they could start bailing, which would make it hard to then obviously keep it up and going. And so just being open and vulnerable, Krista had reached out to us during that time, one of our clients, and they had a retreat center. And she's like, I would love for your team to be able to go up here and use the retreat. And like your team has gone through a lot. And so we did that in November, and it was honestly like we went up there, no plans to work. It was literally, we're just going as a team. We're going to figure out what's going on. And that's when we kind of told them, hey, we have to do this name change because the laws, and we have to do like different things. And it was very open conversation with the team at that point. We've actually kept it going every year since then with having these company retreats, and it's going up there, no work, just being open and honest with each other. And that's been a lot of fun. But it's like, there is no way we would have survived without the vulnerability and being able to tell them, here's what I do know, here's what I don't know. And I'm not going to gaslight you. I'm not going to try to make it a rosy picture. Like, I'm going to be honest. Like, we could have our top 10 clients leave and we'll figure it out. But,
you know, and I think that's so great and so important to have that vulnerability and show that. But there is a point too, I think, and I think a lot of business leaders go through this, and I think even through COVID, where you want to be vulnerable and honest and transparent, but then, you know, you get off the 15th Zoom call today or something, and you're just like, you're maybe kind of losing it. And you get, were you ever at a point where I want to be transparent and do all this, but I also want to show them that I can still run this company. We can still move forward. It's kind of a interesting balance.
It's a very fine line, because it could be that point of being like, are you going to step up and do what needs to be done to keep the company up and going? If it's like, if I was a puddle on the floor, like that would create a lot of distrust. And I joke about, it's almost like you have more kids, of being like, as a parent, how much do you tell them without scaring them, but also giving them the insight they need and the ability to make decisions that they need. And so it was one of those of being like, I'm a very driven person. And with having come up with what our vision was and how we wanted to grow, I was like, we still want to hit this. Like, I'm still going to hit this. And having that commitment and also being like, I'll work the hours that are needed. Even though, like I said, I like to hold my team to the 50 hours. I'm definitely one of those that do as I say, not as I do, which my team also knows about me. So it's like one of those things of being like, I threw myself more into work to try to keep that kind of stuff up and going, more on connections, I feel like, with people of kind of saying, here's what I need. Can you help me? Can you put me in touch with, you know, this kind of person? And then personally was more, actually, that's when I started riding bike.
I was going to say, is there anything you did like just for you?
Yeah, I started, like I said, I was never a big one. I'm definitely not a graceful person, but I was like one of the days when
you were just color guard.
So. Yes, I mean, yes. It was one of those days where a little bit more to this story also is my dad passed away pancreatic cancer 2 years before Kevin passed, and he was 56. Mm. And so literally it's like I would had gone through that whole thing with his death, also very unexpected, like we knew, but it was incurable. Right. So it's like going from that and then into this with Kevin passing, of kind of having that trauma experience pop up again and being like, okay, this is, it's a lot to take on. It's a lot to, you know, go from losing your dad and trying to keep like family stuff together on that side with being the oldest. And then also, you know, coming into losing your business partner and trying to keep that stuff up and going. I remember one of the days I had gotten off a phone call and I was like, I'm just going to go ride my bike 5 miles. I made it to Hudson. I live in Afton. I get all the way over there and I call my husband because I was like, I have no water. I have no, I don't have my wallet with me. I just had to keep going. It was like, really, I was like, I just have to keep putting one foot in front of the other. And so biking actually became very therapeutic for me. So I do that a lot. And then obviously therapy, love therapy. So I did therapy. And then I also volunteer a lot. So it's like one of the groups that I'm involved with, NABO, which is the National Association of Women Business Owners. I'm part of their circle group, so their national board. And so they do retreats for women business owners, because they're like, you guys take on a lot and you don't usually take care of yourself. And so it was actually one of my first times going to Miraval Resorts, which is very much the...
I still have to get there.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Yes.
I always hear about it.
Yes. So I started going to Miraval. It's kind of like, and it was, there's no phones, there's no work. It's very much, you're supposed to just be and meditate and do yoga and do all that kind of stuff. And so that has also become something I do like 1 to 2 times a year, is just going and resetting and stepping away from everything.
So...
Oh, that was a big Minnesota.
Yeah, I was just thinking there's a lot to unpack there. But so you go through the death of your father, the death of your partner, and then you gather yourself and the team and say, we're going to do this. Where's the firm at today and where is it going?
It has been exploding. When we launched Canopy Accounting, the cannabis side, since November, we've increased revenue a lot. Literally, it's business is through the roof right now. And it's one of those things, it's kind of freaky. It's like one of those things, I'm like, the wheels are off and I don't have control. And I like control. And so it's one of those things, it's like this whole new thing. We literally had 4 people start on one day, which I know for a lot of big companies, that's not a like a huge thing. But for us, I was like, we went from hiring like 4 people in a year to literally we hired 4 people and had them all start on the same day. And it's like, we still have probably... if I could hire 10 more people tomorrow, we could fill up. So it's like that part of the business has actually been going really, really well. And I think a lot of it is now that people kind of see what we do and how we work, and not just being like a tax return and like not just pounding them out. We have a lot more clients coming and saying, can you do this? Can you, like, we're picking up clients in Texas and down in all across the East Coast. It's probably more of our business now is outside of Minnesota than it is here.
It seems like it's more of consulting too.
Yes.
Along the way.
Yes.
So not just drop off your packet.
Yeah.
And we'll get it back to you before the 15th and talk to you next.
Yeah. Next April. Yeah. Yes.
So what did you see in that cannabis business that got you excited?
I think part of it is so many accountants and CPAs are very risk averse.
I didn't notice that. Have you ever noticed that?
And bankers.
Oh, zing. And so part of it was they don't like the association. They don't like to have, they're like, well, what are your other clients going to think if you're working in this industry? And I was like, it's an underserved industry. And it's like, it's so new in Minnesota, and it's to be on the ground floor is really exciting to me, to be like, we can help. We can get in. There's so many women going into the cannabis industry. It's crazy. And so it's more one of those of being like, there's so much advice we can help with. There's so much, it's just fun. It's literally being on the ground floor of something and helping to build something in Minnesota that I think is going to be different than any other state. Also with the fact of we were first introduced to it through edibles or through a seltzer or different waters. And to be like, how is this going to affect how Minnesotans actually consume or actually use it? And so it's like that whole, it's a sociology thing that I just get super excited to see. How is this going to change our culture? How is it going to change what we do here in Minnesota?
It's Canopy, right?
Yes.
Canopy Accounting. And tell us, where do you see Roloff Associates and Canopy Accounting like the next 3 to 5 years? What do you see?
I have very big goals. I want to literally double the size of our firm, revenue, and likely people-wise by 2026. Mm-hmm. And so part of this is on the canopy side. And when you grow cannabis, that's what they call it, is a canopy. So that's how the name on that one came up. And so I know. We did hire marketers for that one. They're amazing. And so with that part, it's like, I am very driven now. It's like, we have these goals, and we had really big goals when Kevin was alive. And it was really hard to tailor them back. Because I'm like, there's only one person now that's outselling. There's only like one main contributor. And to be like, we had these plans of what we were going to hit. And I was like, I'm going to hit those still. We're going to make this happen. And our original goal to hit these numbers was in 2024, which is not going to happen. But I was like, 2026, I've committed. I have the stake in the ground. I was like, we're going to hit that.
Obviously, you're driven and, you know, you came from blue collar family, first one going to school and, you know, started a company. While you're out hitting these goals, do you ever think about that? Like, part of you wants to do it for Kevin too, the things that the two of you as partners had planned for the company?
Yes. Yeah. It's one of those, and it sounds so weird. I've been talking with friends like on different stuff I've been nominated for or where we've gotten.
Yeah. By the way, congratulations, 2024 Women in Business honoree sitting here.
Right here.
Yes. Yeah. But I never feel like I've made it yet. And I would have talks with my husband on this. And I was like, anybody would have done this. Anybody would have stepped up and ran the business and did what needed to be done to keep it up. And he's like, no, he's like, most people wouldn't, they wouldn't know how to, or it would be so crippling what happened and that kind of stuff that most people wouldn't be able to get to this point. And to me, I'm like, I don't know if it's just that I'm so goal oriented that I was like, well, we're still going to hit this, or that I just, like I said, control issues of not wanting to fail. But what I struggle with is still the imposter syndrome. Like, I still feel like, even though we've done this and I've doubled the size of the business since he has passed, of being like, I still feel like I haven't proved myself. Like, I still feel like there's still something to hit, something to show, or that I have to hit, you know, a certain revenue mark in order to prove that I'm a legit business owner, which I know is so crazy.
Yeah. You talked about seeing a therapist and talking to people, and yeah, where does that come from?
I think the whole thing of like, growing up and always wanting to prove that I can do better or be better. And it's like, it's one of those things that's like, I know the fact of women business owners getting over $1 million in revenue is so tiny. I'm like, it's like less than 10% of women business owners reach that mark. And we've blown past that. And it's like, but it's still that thing of being, I know we can do more. And I think that's what it is, of being like,
kind of like never satisfied.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. I've tried reading The Gap and the Gain. I'm still like, no, I don't care how far. I'm like, I still know I have this gap that I want to hit.
So did you have a mentor in high school or a teacher that really saw something in you, and a mentor along the way as you've grown your practice and business?
In college, I had one. It was one of my sociology professors. And when she found out I was double majoring, she's like, you are so not an accountant. I don't even know why you're bothering doing this. And I was like, but that's what is cool about it. It's like that I can bring this other aspect to it and be relatable and be able to talk with people about, here's what your money is, here's what tax law is, here's how we do this, without talking down to people. I was like, I can figure out a way to get these two things together and make it work. And then Kevin was obviously a huge mentor for me, and just his belief of being like, hey, you know, I worked for you and now you want me as a business partner. Like, that was a huge thing. I joke that he was kind of like the big brother. We knew how to push each other's buttons very, very easily also. Mm-hmm. So it's like one of those of being like very close with him. And then I also had another client who was big in the real estate industry, and Bill, he also, I mean, just fed into me and being like, no, like what you guys are doing is good. And here's like, just watching how he ran his business and how he kind of grew his family was just instrumental to helping me be like, here's what we want to do, here's where I want to get. And then, but now I was like, I probably don't really have a business mentor now. Should probably actually work towards that again. But
so what about, tell us a little bit about you personally. You mentioned your husband.
Yes.
kids?
Two kids. My son, Jacob, he wants to go by Jake now, which really throws me off. So he's 12. He's in sixth grade. He's really into sports. And then my daughter is 9. She's in third grade, Nora. She's a mini me. And I'm really trying. Like, I was like, I'm telling my husband, I was like, she could do really great things if we don't kill her before she reaches age to be able to, you know, accomplish a lot. But yeah, it's also been interesting, like, because I mean, when all this was happening, when my dad passed, they were 3 and 7. And so like walking through that with your kids and trying to explain and having young kids while you're trying to help take care of things with your family, like that sandwich generation kind of thing was a lot. And then like to get back into it when Kevin had passed and it's like they were still young. So I get very lucky that my husband does a lot more of the main caregiver part with our kids, which was really weird to like have that mentality switch of being like, for so long it was me. And then like, as we started launching and growing, being like, which one of us does it make more sense? And he owns his own company as well. So it just naturally morphed into he's a primary caregiver. And then I'm the one who's more on the business side and kind of getting that stuff up and going.
That's awesome. What a tremendous amount of success.
Yeah, incredible. So with this balance, you touched on a little bit of the balance, you know, and building a business takes an incredible effort, and being a great mom is an incredible effort, being a great partner and all that. So how do you find balance? What's your secret to finding balance? And it's okay. Everyone's sense of balance is different.
You don't have it.
But she's got it. She's got it. Everyone's got their own different, you know, where that bubble on the level lands is a little bit different. But
yes.
What's your secret?
I think on that part is more realizing it ebbs and flows a lot. If I try to do there's just stuff I have to miss on my kids' stuff. And I struggle with it every time. And I travel a lot for work. So one of our fractional CFO clients is down in Texas. So I spend half my time. I'm there every other week. I just flew back actually last night. And so I spend a lot of time in Texas and then back here. And it's one of these things I've realized when I'm down there, I work. I go there, you know, work at the clients for the day, come back to the apartment. I finish up all the stuff I need for RA. And then that way, when I'm home, my goal is I'm at work, you know, during tax season a little bit different, but I usually am done between 4:30 and 5 and go home and it's focused on family. So it's like, that's kind of how I get that part of it, of being like very delineated, because I just do better that way, but also realizing there's just stuff that I'm going to miss and I just have to be okay with that.
You're not going to be 110% mom every day and 110% business owner every day. It's going to be some days are less than others.
Yes. We tell our kids too, of being like, there's times where I can take off, or like we can switch stuff around and be gone. And I was like, this is a good part of owning your own business, of being like, there is that flexibility. But on the flip side, when you need to work, that's a bad thing of owning the business, is it ultimately at the end of the day, I'm the one who is held responsible. And so having those conversations with the kids of being like, hey, like there's a give and take, which is nice to be able to raise that with them, with that mindset to be like, they get it, of being like, sometimes I'll be very focused and be working, and other times I can be more flexible and be home with them and do all the things that they want to do.
So with your dad, did your dad ever see the success that you were having? I know he passed at too early of an age, but did he ever see it?
He saw some, because at that point, I mean, 2018 was kind of the first year we had gotten up and going since we launched so late in 2017. And then he passed away in 2019. So he had seen some, but at that point, since we had just launched the firm, it was still kind of that slow growth, slow going.
Did he ever say, what are you doing?
Yes. It was one of those that it was like, it's scary. It's scary to go out on your own, or probably to watch your kid. Like, I think I'd be scared for my kids to be like, even growing up or now running a business, to be like, it's a big financial risk. It's a lot to put on the line. But he also knew I'm very driven. And so it was one of those things of being like, he knew if I put my mind to it, he's like, I know you can succeed at that. But definitely my family has had times of being like, what are you doing? Like, it's just so different to be like, no, I have this job and I have this career and I really love my career and I really want to hit these goals, of being more focused on that as opposed to being more focused on whether it is family or just.
Well, congratulations on so much. Let's do some rapid fire.
Yeah.
What do you do most Saturday mornings? Like, where would we find you?
Sitting in my living room on a chair with a cup of coffee and a book.
Ooh, what type of a book? What are you reading?
I love Brené Brown. And then I also love just reading complete mind junk.
Right.
Harlequin romance novels.
God, Fabio, no, no, none of those ones. Fabio.
She's got all the old Fabio novels.
What about when you want to go out to a special restaurant? What does that look like and where is it?
I love Red Cow. And I also love, we just started
getting. What do you order there?
The 60-40.
Which is, what is
the bacon? I mean, like, it's just a lot of bacon. And
it's a burger. It's a burger.
Yeah. Yes. And then also focusing on the fun restaurants. We go to Hudson a lot, go to Stillwater a lot and hang out there. I mean, the scenes down there is just so nice.
So you picked up biking. Do you have any biking trips or how far do you go or what, you know, how do you still fit that in?
I also have a Peloton, which I absolutely love. Definitely helps, especially in the winter.
I bet you're just on there like, who can I beat today?
Maybe sometimes. So the most I've done is a 50-mile ride doing the set ones. I was going to look into MS-150, but COVID twice knocked me out of that. And after that, I just haven't focused back on it again.
Beer, wine, whiskey. What's your favorite? We gotta
definitely whiskey. Yes, I am definitely a whiskey girl. I really love bourbon.
My husband is, if he's listening, his ears is like, oh.
Yes, I've toured a lot of distilleries down in Texas. Definitely have some very fun ones down there. But I am.
What's your favorite? I actually know like Basil Hayden. I actually know some of these because we have too much of a collection at home.
Basil Hayden's good. I really love Milam and Green. It's a women-owned distillery, and the head distiller is also a woman.
Oh, I need to check that out.
Yes.
What do you want your legacy to be?
I want to know that what we've done to help clients and what I've done to help my team actually makes a difference. And it's one of those things of being like, to change, I would love to change that CPA model of working 90 hours during tax season. I'm like, it's just not healthy. It's not good for people, and it's a high burnout. And just having, if we can make an influence of even like four other firms changing their mentality and being like, no, we can do this in 50 hours and we can have that balance, I would love for the CPA world to look at that differently as how people work during tax season.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations, Nikki, on all your success. Really, truly, what you've been through the last few years, like, it's pretty miraculous. Good
Thank
job.
Thank you.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah.
Thanks for downloading Off the Record. Be sure to subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast platform. And to learn more, visit bizjournals.com/off the record. This podcast is a presentation of the Minneapolis St. Paul Business Journal in partnership with Platinum Bank. Copyright 2024. All rights reserved.